The future belongs to those who control the culture, and the culture belongs to those who control the conversation. So we are having the conversations you wish you could have at church to build a safe and vibrant community. This is the Oz Table Talk Podcast.
Are we recording, Zoe?
Great. Awesome. Speaking of which, hello, everybody. Welcome to another episode of Oz Table Talk. My name is Luke, and I am at the table with Rick Emerson and...
Who are you again?
Shannon.
Thank you.
Shannon.
It's been so long since you've been here. My brain just fogged on you as I got there. So. So for those of you who have been watching our recent episodes, you would have seen Rick with us a few weeks ago.
Hello.
Hey,
if you haven't... Go watch that episode and then watch this episode.
That's right. Yes, that is very good advice. Yes, all of them. All of them. And so the thing that makes this fun is that Rick does not come from a Christian background, and so he has the ability to come and ask questions without anything colouring them. And we had a lot of fun last time.
So. Yeah. Well, it's good. Good conversation.
I'm curious, Rick, just before we start figuring out where we're going in this conversation, after you did that, like... One, was it what you expected? And two, was there like has there been how have you felt about it since then? Has it been like, yeah, I'm keen to go back and have that conversation, or has it been like, man, that was confusing, or like, how did you process it afterwards?
No, I enjoyed the whole podcast. You know, again, great setup you got here, so it was an absolute pleasure. But yeah, it got me thinking, and so I went home and listened to it the next day, and then. Came up with a few questions here and there, which, you know, sort of fogged up now a bit more. But, you know, like, no, it was good. I really enjoyed it. And, yeah, as I said, sent it off to my father or forwarded it to my father.
Yeah.
He enjoyed it too.
Cool.
He did not expect it. He probably thought it was going to be on fishing or cars or something like that. When I said I've been on a podcast, but, yeah.
That's so cool. Actually, I don't think I mentioned this to you before, but someone who watched that episode sent us an email. And you mentioned it to him?
No, I sent it to him.
Oh, you sent it to him? Yeah.
Yeah, I read that. That's cool.
Yeah, that was so cool. Just somebody that has, you know, they have, you know, had a lot of the same questions, you know. And so just the fact that you're able to ask them in this context, you know, help them out too.
Well, that's
so.
Exactly what you were hoping for. Wanting, that's wasn't
exactly
it?
What
that's
we're
right.
For,
yeah. Exactly right. Yeah. You mentioned that you had a couple of questions, like when you went back and you re-listened to it, you said you immediately, I should have asked this.
Many things come to
many
mind.
Many things?
So, all right, so just, I'll just start with one.
Go for it. Kick off.
On the Bible, okay, so you guys have obviously studied this pretty heavily. From my point of view, all right, how do I word it?
You're not going to offend us. It's all right.
Would it – so you say the devil's come in or Satan's come in and taken over mankind basically with sin or with untruths, how do you put – like how in your mind do you justify that the Bible is not a collection of these, if you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Like is it corrupted, right?
It's so, you know.
Or how do we know, like, obviously we know it's a supernatural book, but how do we know it's
how do we
from
know
the
it's,
right
what do you mean
side?
Supernatural?
Well, like what we were saying last week with the prophecies, like things told 300,
if it can foretell the future,
years.
It's something more than a newspaper.
Yeah. And the fact that it was written over such a long period of time and everybody, said the same thing. And the fact that it's shaped cultures and wars have been fought over it and people have died for it and just, you know, just such an incredible book.
You say it shapes the future. When does that future stop? Like, when does it stop shaping the future? Like, all these stories in here have already happened. Is that correct?
Well, we're living in a very, very privileged time of Earth's history at the moment where almost all of the prophecies have been fulfilled.
Yep.
That are written in the Bible, other than the end time prophecies. So the ones that are about the second coming of Jesus, the end of the world, and the resurrection, and all that sort of stuff.
And all of these stories in here are about a certain time or whatever. Is that time frame end? Does it end or what?
Yeah, it will.
Why
end,
does
we
it
don't
end?
Know when.
Yeah, but I mean, in the actual Bible now,
Yes, there is. So
I don't think I'm understanding the question, but you are, so you answer.
Thank you. So the Bible does have... Okay, so the Bible's not written in a chronology. Like, you know, here is the start, here is the middle, and here is the end. Right. There is a loose order to it because that makes sense, right? We start with creation, the beginning of time, and we end with the end of time. Yes. But what's written in between that, as we're chatting about last week, is 66 different books, and they don't follow a clear linear order. So some of the books are prophecy, where they're saying this is going to happen in the future. Some of the books are written as history, so don't forget what happened in the past. Yeah. But if you look at all of the sections of the Bible that obviously all the things that are written as history or first-hand accounts, they're obviously all things that have happened a long time ago. But if you look at the pieces of the Bible that claim to be future facing, like they're saying this is a prophecy, this will happen in the future,
yep,
almost all of those have already happened. There's only a few prophecies that have not yet taken place, and they all claim to be relevant to the end of the world or the end of time, right when Jesus comes back, when the dead who are currently asleep are raised back to life. Like that, I don't know exactly how long that is going to take place, like how long that will take, but the only prophecies in the Bible that have not been executed, that have not happened just like they said they were going to, are the few prophecies that deal with that time.
Right.
Mm. And I think that it would be beneficial to learn the prophecies of the Bible so that you could trust it.
Mm.
I don't think that this is the place to do that.
Mm.
To answer your question, like, we trust the Bible because we know that it's we know that it's a supernatural book because of the prophecies fulfilled, the accuracy of them, time prophecies, this many years from now or this many years from this day, this thing's going to happen, and it did, you know, and stuff like that.
Most recent one is the 1800s.
Yeah, the last time prophecy to be fulfilled, which essentially brings the end of prophetic time from Bible prophecy, was in 1844.
Right.
Right. So that's not that long ago. Right. So since that happened, we're like, okay, well, now we're living in the time of the end. Like, the end could happen at any stage. Like, it could happen at any time.
Mm-hmm. You know? So what was that prophecy that was you talking about? Mm. In 1844 or whatever?
Yes, that's the
Daniel.
It's Daniel chapter 8.
2,600 year prophecy.
Yes, 2,300 day prophecy.
2,300, yeah.
So
I said that wrong.
The summary of that, because that's a really, really big study, which if you're keen, we could actually do that maybe in another episode. We could like devote a whole episode to that. But the short of that is it was promised that in the Old Testament, God says, I need to give you something like a learning tool to understand how I'm going to save you. And so he gives them the sanctuary services. And the sanctuary services is like a series of rituals that help them to understand. They live in agricultural societies. They understand the symbols of sheep, goats, you know, farming. That's the symbols that these people understand. And so God gives them a way to understand how he's going to save them using the tools they understand.
Okay.
In that, he says, okay, this is what's going to happen, and cutting out all the bits in the middle, after 2,300 days, my role is going to change, and we're going to be moving into this time of judgment, which is right before the end of time when I will return. And that moving of God's role from one stage into this final stage of judgment, that was what happened in 1844.
Okay.
So that's the end point. It coincides with things that happen on the earth, people understanding things, people growing in knowledge. Like, so there's like ways that we tie that date to it. But ultimately, that's what the prophecy was about.
It's a lot.
What did you...
Yeah.
I can just keep going with it. But
But I think we still haven't answered your original question.
That's what I was going to say,
Okay, so like the Bible claims, I've got a verse here that I reckon is in 2 Timothy chapter 3 verse 16, and it says, "All Scripture is given by inspiration of God and is profitable for doctrine, reproof, correction, for instruction in righteousness." Right. So the claim that the Bible is making about itself is that it is written by inspiration of God. And another one in...
But would that not be something that Satan could write?
Mm-hmm. Yes. This is... I'm getting to that. So this is the claim that it makes, and how can we back that up, I guess, is what you're asking.
Basically what I'm asking is how do you have the faith in everything that's in this book when you, we started the podcast pretty much last time with you saying that all of humanity has been taken over by Satan and we live basically under a rule of lies, if you know what I mean?
Yeah, well.
And yet you originally, you guys have a dead set faith in this book that's written in that time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
After we've been taken over by lies.
Yeah. So how do I?
Can I have a crack just while you're going on that? Because I think there's a couple of things here, right?
Yeah.
One of them is that it's called faith for a reason. So there is a point where it's not provable in the mathematical sense of it being provable.
Yeah, that's quite clear to me.
Yeah, but but I believe it is provable, like beyond reasonable doubt. So, and what I mean by that is there's a few things. So just hypothetically, right? If you as an individual could be absolutely confident that there are examples or prophecies in the Bible that accurately predicted what happened hundreds and sometimes even like over 1,000 years ahead, and you know, you were able to also see in the Bible that there was nothing that was false, right? You couldn't falsify. There was no lies that you could prove that were in there. Would you consider that to be an accurate document? Like, is that something that you would have faith in? If you could prove 99% of what's in a document and there's 1% of it you can't prove, would you say that you could trust the last percent?
It depends on how I was proving it. Like,
can I say something?
You're
like,
just proving it with faith.
Nothing that we do in our lives is based off of proof. So you can't prove anything. Mm-hmm. If I said to you, like the classic example is the last Thursday example. So if I said to you, like, everything that's ever existed came into existence last Thursday, and all of our memories also came into existence at that time to make us think that it's been going on for a very long time. Can you prove that that didn't happen? The fact of the matter is you can't, because it's an outlandish statement, right? And nothing and how can you be 100% sure that when you get in your car and drive home you're not going to die? Like, you can't prove that. So everything in our life is based off of evidence, and nothing's really based off of proof.
Yeah, I mean, right?
So when it comes
in our
to,
lifetime,
when it comes
we
to
could
something
prove
like this,
with
I would
photos,
say,
you know, like for that sort of a thing. I know it's harder to go back generations and generations.
Those photos came into existence last Thursday as well.
Yeah, right.
You know, like I'm saying, it's an outlandish statement, but you can't prove it wrong, right? But the evidence is very clear that that's wrong, right? Yeah. So what I'm saying is, like, when it comes to stuff like this, we don't look for proof. We look at the evidence.
Okay.
The evidence is that Jesus was a historical man, and that he died and rose again, and that he loved everybody, and that he changed the world, and that we should probably look into that.
See, I don't see your evidence of that, though. I don't see it, if you know what I mean.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't know
where that evidence is.
Yeah.
Do you mean for Jesus as a person?
You've got that faith in all of this, what you just said for an example.
Yeah.
With Jesus and him coming back, like, and you've got evidence of it.
Yeah.
You know, like, before last Thursday, I've got evidence in my phone of photos, say, or whatever, like that.
Yeah.
You know, like, or, you know, you can go and talk to people, other people who have actually seen me before last Thursday, so to speak.
Yeah.
So,
yeah, that's what I'm saying.
That's
very, very good evidence.
So I can't see your evidence that you have of Jesus coming.
I have. You know. So that's why I'm saying, like, I believe it because I've seen all the evidence.
That's what I mean. I don't understand by evidence.
Like evidence for the
resurrection that you have
is
evidence.
A good one. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So let's get into the evidence of the resurrection. Is it? Mm-hmm. A good one to do.
Go for it.
So, wasn't prepared for this at all. It's been a long time since I've done resurrection stuff.
Did you have a
book on Josephus.
It doesn't have to be the resurrection. Handy. I just use that because you just said, you just stated it, that you have evidence of Jesus.
So, okay, can the Bible is a record of so many different things that happened, okay?
Mm.
If you go back, you know, I'll use one example. The Hittites is one example, right? That's a whole race of people that the Bible talks about as being something that's a race of people in existence.
Yeah.
Scholars, atheistic scholars, used to point to the Hittites as being an example of why you shouldn't trust the Bible. Because, look, these people don't even exist. We've found no data. There's no archaeological proof that they are even they were even a people.
Yeah.
And, you know, fast forward, I can't remember how many years, but then they started unearthing these ancient, you know, chiseled tablets where they were found out that not only were the Hittites a people, but they were incredibly significant. They were very powerful. And so then, oh, okay, well, then that part of the Bible actually is true. Mm. And that's a recurring theme. There's these huge lists of things that were once considered to be fairy tales from the Bible that have been established as being fact. And so there's the historical case for the Bible, the fact that...
Well, even that, just on that, even like that, see, I from what you just said, I take it as that, okay, the people existed.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't mean the stories in the book.
Mm-hmm.
So word for word, that doesn't make them proof. It makes the proof that the people exist.
But the evidence is that the Bible is a historical document and not just something that was made up.
The point is that when you have how much evidence do you need? Okay, let me ask you this. Do you ever question the existence of Alexander the Great as a historical figure and how he ruled? Do you think he was real?
I don't know that he was, no. I don't know. Like, it could still... Like, yeah, I can't say for sure, no.
No? Okay. Yeah. See, that is an interesting thing because, you know, I would hazard a guess that any history scholar globally would tell you that he was a real person who actually existed, who died in his early 30s.
And when did he die? So, like, I don't know the details on him. But
okay.
Alexander
the Great, he died, well, there's mixed reports as to how he died, but he died in his early 30s after conquering the then known world, basically. Yeah. He was.
But in what era? What year was it?
Bronze Age, Greece. I'll check.
300 BCs. I mean, this is, you know, if you were a history nut, a scholar, then this stuff would be like, of course.
Mm-hmm.
And I think
but even
that
then, it's only going to be for 200 years, isn't it, or something?
Yeah, I think that the point that Luke was working his way towards is that Jesus as a person is the most verified,
recorded
person in antiquity. Like, historically, he's 100% existed.
Mm.
Yeah, yeah, well. Okay.
That if you doubt what we're saying,
I'm not doubting. I'm
fully for that. You've got to look into it yourself.
I'm just going with the conversation. You said you have evidence of Jesus being resurrected. I was just curious on where you get your evidence from.
So the evidence
to have your faith. If you know what I mean.
If you look at historians, right? Historians, the evidence that they cite is first-hand accounts. And if you are going to, and any court of law, that's how it operates, right? It's based on witnesses and what they say. There is we're in a time where we have so much evidence that the people that wrote about Jesus himself, those documents have so much weight behind them, like as far as like, you know, verifiable copies of the things that people actually wrote in that time frame, and not just the people who were in support of Jesus, but people who were opponents of him as well. So you've got people who are incentivized to call him a liar and people who are also his followers, and they both agree on who he was, when he lived, and ostensibly what he did. What they disagree on is, was he the son of God or not?
Right.
And so all of the evidence stacks up, I think, very, very strongly for who he was, when he lived, what he did. Yes. The real question comes down to, and this is where the faith comes in, and that is, do you accept him as being the son of God, or do you say, no, he wasn't? And if you say, no, he wasn't, well, ultimately, however you cut it, you've only really got three options. You know, you can say, okay, yes, he was who he claimed to be. you can say he was a liar and he was a nobody, or you could say that he was crazy because, you know, I don't think you could really you can't really make
that argument. Yeah.
Yeah, you can't really make that argument because people make it. Yeah. yes. But there's too much good evidence for the fact that he was in his right mind. So he was either a liar or he was who he said he was, but he can't really be anything else. And so that's where it comes down to faith.
Yeah. And then when it comes to the resurrection stuff, it's so he died on a cross, which was a Roman form of torture. And so what they would do is they would nail you up by your hands.
Yep.
And then you'd hang there from your hands like this, and it would suffocate you because the weight of your body would be pulling down on your lungs. And in order to breathe in when you're in that position, you have to pull yourself up. And so in order to breathe, you have to pull yourself up, but you're not holding anything because you've got a nail straight through there.
Yeah.
Right? So you pull yourself up to breathe and then back down, and it's just like an awful way of killing someone, right? And then they put a crown of thorns on his head and like push that in. They hung him up completely naked to, you know, essentially humiliate him. So he died in a very awful way. And the account says that one of the Roman soldiers said, "Oh, is he still alive or is he dead?" And so he went and stabbed him in the side, and where they stabbed him, out came, it says it came water, right?
And mixed with the blood.
Mixed with blood, right? Which essentially, like, I'm not a doctor, but all the doctors that talk about this subject that I've seen go, oh, yeah, that's proof that he was dead, because if he was alive, then that wouldn't have happened, blah, 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 right? And so you go, okay, he was definitely dead. And then they take him and they bury him in a tomb for 3 days. And then all of his followers say, he's alive, he's alive. We've seen him, he came, he saw us. And then how many people was it?
Five.
500.
500 people also seen him, verified it, said, yeah, he's alive. He's walking around with us. Here he is. He was back on Earth for several weeks, I think.
And the interesting thing that I find in that part of the story is that in that time frame, all of the things that Jesus did before that, there were plenty of people who wrote against him and said, oh, no, he didn't do that or whatever. There was plenty of people that were naysayers, but there is nobody, there is no contemporary account of any of that, of people saying anything negative about that account. Like, because if this guy didn't actually come back from the dead and wasn't actually seen by 500 people, wouldn't you think that's the first thing that the people that were against the Christians would be saying? They'd be going, that didn't happen.
Never happened.
They couldn't because there were so many witnesses. So.
Yeah. And then the writers of the gospel, at least.
And when we say the gospel, what we're meaning by that is the books that are specifically regarding Jesus' life. That's the first four books of the Old Testament.
You've got the four books, Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John.
Do you guys know who He-Man is, so?
Yeah, watched him as a kid.
So could it not be like a really early He-Man's type story that Satan has put out there or something like that? That's sort of like what my question
Okay. That is a good question. Let me ask you this.
You know what I mean? Like,
let me ask you this. If you were – okay, I'll make a deal with you. I will give you $10 million. Okay. I will give you
I like this deal.
This is a good deal, okay? I will give you $10 million.
Might not be as good as you think.
I will give you $10 million. All you need to do is to tell everybody that I came back from the dead. Would you do it?
I can reach everybody, but
anyone who asked you, right?
Sure, I'd give it a go.
Yeah. Okay. What if someone comes to you after that and holds a gun to your head and says, "Did he really die?
Did you really go to the moon, so to speak?"
Yeah. Yeah. would you be happy to? Would you be happy to die for my lie, or would you be like, "Nah, he didn't. Sorry." Yeah. you wouldn't die for a lie, right?
What about they hang you upside down and start sawing you in half and say, "Go on, admit that it's not true." Mm. You know.
Yeah, you'd be pretty incentivized.
That's what happened to one of the disciples.
Yeah,
they never once broke. They always consistently said, "No, Jesus. He did. It's true."
And why would hundreds of people all universally choose to die rather than say that they were wrong?
Yeah, see, like all of that is all part of the same He-Man story, isn't it?
No. Because these are first-hand accounts.
This goes back to the proof versus evidence. Yeah, right. Yeah. So, like, sure, maybe you say, okay, it's a He-Man story, you can't prove me wrong. No, maybe I can't. But the evidence is very, very strong.
I'm not saying it is. I'm just sort of, you know. But
well, that's my argument is we don't base our lives off of proof. We base it off of evidence. And the evidence for Jesus' resurrection is incredibly strong.
Hmm.
From the book.
Oh, from history.
Here's another way of asking it.
Antiquity, from all kinds of places.
What's to say that 200 years ago, like when we sort of, someone didn't come out with this storybook and put it all down then, So from 200 years ago, all of it.
Okay. So there was...
So all the history in it is...
Written after the fact?
As... a pretend story, He-Man story, like I'm saying, about this He-Man who's Jesus.
Archaeology would prove that wrong very,
very quickly,
very easily, essentially.
So. There was in Qumran, in the Middle East, there was in the early 1900s, there was a group of Bedouin shepherds. And there were some kids, they threw a rock. And we told you about this last time?
Yeah, okay. Yeah, yeah.
So these documents that they found have exact replicas of the Bible from 800 years before Jesus was even born.
Right.
So there's no legitimate archaeologist that would be able to make the argument that this was written after.
But you guys haven't seen these.
Yes, I actually have.
Have you?
Yes, I have.
Where are they?
There is a museum, in the Middle East for it. But some of them were sent to Australia as a part of a museum exhibit in Canberra, and I went to see them. So I actually have seen them in person.
Heaps
of people have seen them in person. And I think what we were saying last week is that document has prophecies about the life of Jesus in it that were fulfilled, which is very, very good.
Mm-hmm.
And very, you could evidence view them online.
Wait a second. Would you agree that that's good evidence if that's true?
It's something. I guess my mind straight away goes to, could someone have knocked them up? If you know what I mean, like, could they be have
put fake scrolls or whatever?
Could they be made to justify their religion? You know, like it's so many wars, but and that's so many the thing. Deaths get,
these get, were found by people who didn't believe in Jesus. What incentive did they have?
Yeah, but if I knew those people who found it, then maybe I would believe it. But the powers to be, the way I see it, is they could.
There's more evidence.
They could have
though.
Just come out like our government now. It's just ridiculous. Like they could have come out and gone, we need something to prove this because Rick's over here is saying that, he's coming out with some points. You know, we need some proof to show this dude, right?
So, but here's the thing. Those scrolls, right, they didn't just, here's some scrolls, and read them. These were written on a constellation of different mediums, right? Some were written on animal hide. Some were written on copper that had been rolled. So all different kinds of things that were parts of the media. And some of them had, essentially welded together over the course of time. And so this whole thing, some of it was using ultrasonic or like imaging technology, like medical imaging technology, where they use to like read the ink through the layers because they have to destroy it in order to open it, and things like this.
It'll fall apart essentially.
Yeah, and so like these are things like this level of patina, historic patina, so to speak, is so deep that it's not something that's fabricatable. And if you can't fabricate it, it came from a time before that, and the people who found it and translated it don't have any skin in the game. They have no incentive for it to claim that the Bible is true. How much more information, how much more evidence would you need before you called it compelling? Come on.
Yeah, well, straight away I'd be like, my mind goes to, okay, that would be definitely something if I would say the Catholic Church or whatever church to prove my case. I can get, people to come in and sit with me and be, justify, say that this is this and that's that. And, so I guess I would have to see it in person and have to be touched by it in some way, for it to
be proof. This is getting
same thing with Hitler, say, I know it was a terrible time, or I believe it was a terrible time. Whether it went down like we get told, I don't know, because you know.
There's still people alive today that
exactly
couldn't
yeah.
say it. But
yeah, yeah.
In 10 years' time, if they all died, would you go, oh, well, they're all dead, so I don't believe it anymore?
No, it wouldn't be I don't believe it. It would be like I don't have any proof. Like, and I still even to this day.
Proof of how it went.
I don't know anyone personally.
Yeah.
I know that it was a terrible time.
Yeah, yeah. No, I get what you're saying.
Okay,
yeah.
So I think this is going in an interesting direction because this is – I think this what you're asking for is actually something different to what we're talking about, and I think this is why we're sort of been trying to look for common ground here.
Yeah, I probably haven't worded it.
No. But I think there's an interesting thing to be said here. When you have there's objective evidence, right? There's something that someone else experienced,
yeah.
And there is a requirement for you to have – a degree of trust in the person that's delivering that message, right? Like, you know, some guy could drop to you on the street and he could tell you anything and you may or may not believe it. But if your son came to you and said, Dad, this happened,
yep.
You know, you're gonna go, okay, like, you know, I believe you because I have a shared experience, okay? I think what you're asking for is actually a lot deeper than even what we're talking about. I think what you're saying is that you would need to have a personal experience. You know, someone else's experience is not sufficient, right?
And if it's firsthand, mm-hmm. then yeah, like in recent times, where it's you know even like in Hitler time, you know, mm-hmm. so that it is something that's mm-hmm. a bit more real.
Mm-hmm.
Yet then, mm-hmm. or but what I meant by being touched by it is like I guess you guys have had something within yourselves where you've been touched by mm-hmm. the Lord or whatever mm-hmm. it is, to just. Have the faith, if you know what I mean. Like, and I don't mean to try and come across it today that I am in any way belittling.
No, what no you I don't feel it at all.
Not good. Oh,
yeah.
good, good.
Yeah, yeah.
So if
it's
if
just
we
I try
shared,
and understand
if
that,
we shared with you, if you trusted us and we shared with you our stories, instead of sharing with you the stories from the Bible, would that be more compelling to you than this? Is that what you're saying? Like if
No.
If I shared to you, like if you said I don't believe in the supernatural and I shared with you the supernatural experiences that I've had, would that compel you to go, oh, maybe there is supernatural?
No, I'd still be the same. Like it's just, yeah. Like I have friends say, to put it in an example, I have friends who believe they've seen UFOs. So, you know. I haven't seen one person. I've seen some odd things, and I question it. I haven't seen a UFO. I haven't seen an alien or anything personally. So I've been in exactly the same headspace with that. They've seen it. They believe it. Okay. Personally, for that to come to me, I need to be touched by it myself and see it. Okay. As soon as I do, I'll probably try and convince everyone else as well. But that's sort of,
Yeah, this is a very classic skeptic sort of mindset, and I get it.
Yeah.
The mindset that I have is, okay, if I have never seen a UFO, but five of my friends say they've seen one, I'm probably going to start believing in UFOs, right?
Probably.
Well, I would. Like, I know one guy who's told me his UFO story, and, you know, that was pretty compelling. I'm like, okay, like I don't think that you're telling me a lie. I think that what you're telling me, you genuinely
you
think
actually
you
saw.
You know, but
so you're saying if four others come to you,
if four of my other close friends and said if four more of my friends said I seen a UFO, this is what happened. I seen a UFO, this is what happened. I seen a UFO, this is what happened. And if all of those stories seem to have similar elements, I would go okay,
maybe something.
UFOs are real.
So what if they came to you and said, I believe Satan.
Or I don't believe in God. Or
something else. Yeah. And then five of them got together and did that and kind of told you.
Yeah, that's a good question. I think that's a bit of a different thing because.
Your faith. But yeah.
Well, also because I know a lot more people that don't worship Satan and
okay,
agree that
he's
bad.
You
know? There's a weight of evidence there.
There is a weight of evidence.
I think there's another point here, though. I think there's another point. So if you – there's an experiential element, right?
Yeah.
Like you might be able to make a case that, you know – a person didn't exist or didn't actually do that thing or whatever. But nobody could convince me that my wife doesn't exist, right? Because
she's flesh and blood right there.
Right there, right? I've had experience with her. And people have said the same thing about this, you know, and if someone could prove to me beyond shadow of doubt that God does not exist to my satisfaction, I would be okay. I'm in pursuit of truth. But I think that I am probably at the place now where that is essentially impossible because he is as real to me as my wife is at this point because I've journeyed with him for so many years and I've seen so many things happen that are beyond the realms of chance or coincidence. And I have, you know, I have what I really genuinely believe is an actual personal relationship with him that someone telling me he doesn't exist would be like trying to convince me that my wife doesn't exist.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, and I think that's, and I don't think you can actually get to that place without, you know, the Bible has, there's a passage where it says, taste and see that the Lord is good. And in other words, you can't, you know, you can look at like the nicest chocolate in the world, but you will never know what that tastes like unless you actually taste it. And I think faith in God is like that. You have to be open to saying, okay, let's entertain the thought of this. Let's live my life as if this was real and let's explore this. Because until you actually have lived experience in it, you can't, there's a very real way there that you actually can't know how good it is.
So if you just,
go for
if
it.
You got shipwrecked, no Bible, no nothing.
Yes.
On an island for the rest of your days, in 30 years' time, do you still have the same faith? Yeah. Do you have the same relationship with God?
Oh, like I don't see why I wouldn't, if not better.
Yeah.
Because what I was about to say, probably be stronger by the
most of the people, like there's examples. There's people that
even
I've,
if you didn't have the book.
Yeah, even without the book.
Yeah, right.
Like there's examples. Oppression, suffering tends to lead, not all, I'll grant that, not all people, but most people, it tends to lead them into closer reliance on God and closer communion with him, not decreased communion with him.
Mm.
How would they know, or say if that happened when you're really young, okay?
Yeah.
How would they know about the end of times and things like that and what how to?
No, they wouldn't. But knowing about the end of times and how to.
That doesn't save you.
That's not a salvational issue.
No.
Right. So knowing all of this stuff is sort of something that comes after, you know, many years of being a follower of Christ, you know, and you know, you get yourself right with God, you get yourself secure in the, in your faith and you follow that journey and then, you know, curiosity will lead you to study his word and then you'll learn a whole lot of interesting things. But none of that is necessary for salvation. The only thing that's necessary for salvation is accepting Jesus. Because it's by faith that we are saved, not by anything that we can do.
Or anything, or any amount of knowledge. You know,
or any
just
amount of knowledge.
Just because you might know more than another person about the Bible, it doesn't make you any more saved or more important.
Which is sort of my point. If you're on an island on your own since you were a kid,
you
might not have ever heard Jesus' name.
The great example.
Yeah.
How do you accept him?
The greatest example of is the thief on the cross, which is on the top of my head. I don't remember where to find it. Do you know where to find it?
No, I don't. I'm actually going somewhere else.
Matthew 24.
I need a comic book.
It'll be around Matthew chapter 27.
Yeah,
it'll be thereabouts.
I was trying to think of Luke, but Matthew works.
While you find that,
I've got another one for you.
Yeah.
Quick one. I don't want to change it while you guys are looking at something. From our last podcast, I sort of got that you guys hold on to a lot of your negativity, so to speak. So when you feel like you've sinned or you've done something bad, you guys hold on to it really full on. And I sort of got from it as well that when you feel that you've done something righteous, good, whatever – you hand it off and give it to God. It's God's. You're like, here you go, God, that's how God's working in me or whatever it is. You know, here you go, you take it all and you keep all the negativity within yourself. That, to me, would be a classic move by Satan for mankind to hold on to negativity and to get rid of positivity.
I agree with you.
Yeah, right. Okay.
Simple. I actually think that is one fundamentally wrong thing that Christians do, in that they hold on to the sin, because from my perspective, Jesus died to get me as far away from that sin as possible. It actually says that he throws the sin into the depths of the ocean, like so far that it can never come back to you. And I think Christians hold on to that in a way that is really unhealthy.
Yeah, and you, from what I got, you guys seem to play it over and play it over and punish yourselves within. Yeah. That's in a certain way sort of thing.
Yeah, it's hard not to, but yeah, I don't think I do much. Depends on.
I'm curious what we said that made you think that, because
I just remember you saying, you in particular, said a couple of things like, when a good point came up, I think you said, "Well, that was the Lord working in me to get this done," or that was just something to get. I can't remember exactly what it was, and I just felt from it and took away from it that when you do something or you feel you've done something righteous or whatever it is, it's because of the Lord, and you give Him the credit for the good.
Mm-hmm.
And any of the bad you take onto yourself, and that's just sort of the way I felt. Yeah, I can't remember exactly.
Well, the way I see it is that when you accept Christ, you hold on. You do. I believe as a human, we are responsible for the decisions that we've made.
100%.
And so, you know, yes, I think we should hold on to that. Not that we should hold on to it. We can't help but hold on to it until we find
forget about it.
But until we find a way to relieve that burden, right? And the whole point of what Jesus did was so He could take that from us. And so I don't feel condemned for any of the sins that I've committed, even the ones that I committed this week. They're not mine, they're His. He took them. And that's what I would consider the feeling of freedom. The fact that I consider the good things that I do to be a result of Him living in me is also liberating, because I see that as how He is teaching me how to be the peak version of myself, right? So anyway,
but I also don't take credit for that. So like you said, you know, if
insightful
question, all
of
the horrible things that I've done, and I don't feel the weight of them weighting me down, because I know that He's taken that sin for Him. And also, as you said, I'm sort of repeating a bit of what you said to get to a point. What you said is, you know, the good things that I do as a result of Him living through me, I also don't really take any credit for that, because just as the sin is no longer mine, those good deeds that I do are also not really mine. The glory goes to God.
But you don't get the sins taken away from you till Jesus comes back. Is that right?
No. Like from the sin. As far as I'm concerned, as far as the Bible teaches, our sins were forgiven when Jesus died thousands of years ago, right?
Even
the ones I'm doing now.
I thought he had to come back, sorry.
Oh, sorry. He's coming back, but He's coming back to put basically to put justice in place. So those that have accepted Him get to live for eternity, and He's setting things right. He's not coming back to forgive us. We're already forgiven.
Sins.
He desperately wants to eradicate all wickedness and evil.
Yeah.
But he can't do that until he's sure that it's played out long enough that no one's ever going to try it again.
Or desire to do it. Yeah.
Or desire to do it again. Yeah. Right? Because he's playing chess and we're playing checkers, really, you know. Like, he's playing a much bigger game. There's a much bigger picture. And he's trying to make sure that nobody ever does this again.
Mm. Can I just cycle back? Because I wanted to get to there's this story.
I found my verse. Can we do this first?
Yeah, okay.
All right, back to what we were saying before about how it's nothing that you do that can get you into heaven except your acceptance of Jesus. So I found, this is Jesus was hung on the cross, right? As I was explaining, on either side of Him were two thieves, right? And they were also being killed by the
Romans.
By the Romans.
So why was he hung on the cross, or is that going to branch off? Sorry.
That is going to branch off.
Okay.
Let me do this. Sorry. I love your questions, but so one of the thieves on the other side was like, I know you, you're that Jesus, you know. You know, if you're the Son of God, you can save us, you know, get us all down from this cross, you know.
So Jesus used to say, I'm the Son of God.
Yeah.
Yeah, right, cool.
And the other thief on the other side said to him, it says in verse 42 of Luke chapter 23, it says, "Then he said to Jesus, 'Lord, remember me when you come into your kingdom.'" Right? So instead of mocking Jesus as the other one did, he said, "Lord, remember me when you come into your kingdom." And Jesus said to him, "As surely as I say to you today, you will be with me in paradise." Right? So he's saying, because you accepted that I am the Son of God, that I am the Lord, you will receive salvation. And that's it. That's all he ever had to do, right? And that's all we ever have to do is say, "Lord, remember me. Lord, save me," right? In Romans 8, I think it says that anyone who calls on the name of the Lord will be saved. And it really is that simple.
But there is a but, because I want to come back to, because I think, did you want to say something?
But your question is those who don't know anything about
him. Yeah, what about those that just didn't hear about him, right? Yeah. You know, the theoretical person on a desert island. There is also a verse for that. So there's a number of verses for that, but my favorite is in Acts chapter 17. And this is a part of the story where, I don't know if you've heard of the Apostle Paul. I don't know if you've heard of this guy.
No.
But this guy, he started out, he appears in the Bible the very first time as the guy that is traveling around and getting Christians killed, right? He is on a mission to destroy Christianity.
He's killing him.
Oh, yeah. He's not killing him yet. He's just imprisoning him.
He was the one that incited the stoning of Stephen.
That's true.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. So yeah, he wants to imprison and kill Christians. This is his thing right now. And somewhere in that process, he gets into a situation, that's a whole story, but he becomes a Christian himself. Mm-hmm. Where now, fast-forwarding through the story a bit, he ends up traveling into these different places. He ends up in Athens in Greece. And while he's there, he's looking for an opportunity. He's like, how do I present the good news about what I know about Jesus to these people? They're a totally different culture. They're worshiping all these different gods, and this is very foreign to them. And so he's like, how do I do this? Anyway, there was a place in ancient Athens called the Areopagus, and also called Mars Hill. That's where all of the philosophers, all of the thinkers, the movers and shakers from Athens, they would collect there on a regular basis, and they would have it out over these ideas and argue with one another and present all of these different ideas, right?
Tell their stories.
Mm. The big thinkers.
Yeah. All the big thinkers. And somebody hears Paul talking in the marketplace and goes, "Hey, come up to the Areopagus tonight. Like, you know, we'll hear what you got to say there."
Eminem's playing.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. And so he goes up and he goes, right. And he does something that we often label contextualization. So in other words, he takes the truth, but he puts it in a package that these people are going to get, right? And so this is in this passage here. He says, verse 22, it says, "Then Paul stood in the midst of the Areopagus and he said, 'Men of Athens,'" so he's starting his sermon, "'Men of Athens, I perceive that in all things you're very religious. For as I was passing through, considering the objects of your worship," so he's looking at all the idols as he's walking through, "I even found an altar with this inscription, 'To the unknown God.'" And, you know, you can read about this God in the history books, that they didn't want to risk offending the God that they couldn't remember or didn't know the name of. And so they actually had an altar at that time to the God that they couldn't remember or the one they didn't know.
Okay.
And so he uses that as his way to explain his God. And he's like, okay. "Therefore, the one whom you worship without knowing, it's actually him that I proclaim to you. God, who made the world and everything in it, since he is the Lord of heaven and earth, does not dwell in temples made with hands, nor is he worshipped with men's hands as though he needed anything, since he gives to all life and breath and all things." So he's saying, so the God I'm telling you about is actually the one that made everything. And he's the one that you're talking to here about, the unknown God. He doesn't need you to build a temple in order for him to be God. He just is. Right? And so this is the point that's relevant to your question. "And he has made all from one blood, every nation of men, to dwell on all the face of the earth, and has determined their pre-appointed times and the boundaries of their dwellings, so that they should seek the Lord, and that they should hope and they would grope for him and find him, though he is not far from each one of us. For in him we live and move and have our being. For as some of your own prophets have said," and then he goes on to quote some of their prophets, and picking up again in verse 30, he says, "Truly these times of ignorance, when you didn't know about him, God overlooked that. But now, because you know, because I'm telling you about him, now he commands all men everywhere to repent, because he has appointed the day on which he will judge the world in righteousness." And then he talks about Jesus being the one who will do the judging. So to make that into modern English, He's saying, this is the God that you didn't know about. I'm telling you about him. He's actually over everything else, number one. Number two, he decided when you would be born, like, you know, the fact that you were born in the 1900s versus someone being born in, you know, 800 BC. He picked when you'd be born and where. So he picked that you'd be born in Australia and I would be too. And the reason that he said he would pick those places is so you would have the maximum likelihood of being able to find him and have a relationship with him. That's why you were born when and where you were. And then he says, you know, in the times before that, before you knew about him, God winked at that ignorance. That's the language that he uses elsewhere. So basically, if you don't know, God doesn't hold you accountable for the things you don't know. He only holds you accountable for the things that you do. And so I would say that's the answer for the kid that grew up on the island. If that kid was living according to their conscience, doing the things that were right,
yep,
then they are okay. The problem for that hypothetical child would be if they're 42 and a boat arrives on the island and they get taken somewhere else and somebody gives them the opportunity to learn about Jesus, to learn about how that operates, then that person knows and they're responsible for what they know, just like each one of us is. So.
Yeah. You're one of three things. You're either ignorant and God knows that you're ignorant, mm-hmm, or you're in acceptance of him, or you're in rebellion against him, mm-hmm, or denial of him. Mm-hmm. So those are really your options. And so, you know, it seems harsh, but there's no really other way of doing it, mm-hmm, you know?
Yeah, I can see that.
Yeah.
And I would say that there are people who are...
there's going to be people in heaven that show up and go,
why am I here?
What is this?
Yeah. <You know? laughs> Yes. There's actually, prophecies around that where there will be people, because you were saying, we were talking before about Jesus being nailed to a cross. There's people who will see his scars and they'll say,
what's that?
Yeah, what's that? Mm. Like, what happened to you? That, like, they will have no knowledge of who Jesus was or what he did, but how they lived and, you know, their response to God's influence on their life was such that they were saved. So, yeah.
Yeah.
Mm, okay.
Because there's also the aspect of them being ignorant to the true God, because there's people who have been given this idea of who God is, who as a like wrathful one who just hates pretty much everything unless he's being worshipped or something like that.
The Dark Ages view of God.
Yeah. Mm. And so they think of that God and go, I don't believe in that God. Mm. And where we would go, yeah, we don't believe in that God either. So they're ignorant to the true God.
Yeah.
And in that stage where God goes, I understand where you're at.
I actually would go so far as to say, I think people who are atheists, not just agnostic, but people who are like vehemently in opposition to the idea of God, if the God they are rejecting is that God that you're describing, I think they're a lot closer to being saved than people who accept that God. Mm. Which
atheists would be, because they reject all gods, don't they?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But my point is, if the reason they're rejecting God is because they think that the God that is that people are, well, the God that they're rejecting is the one that is that wrathful version of God, then I actually think that God would be in support of that decision, because that's not the version, that's like them believing a version of him that doesn't even exist.
I think it's Ricky Javis, is it, or whatever?
Oh, Ricky Gervais, yeah.
Yeah. Did you hear his?
Yeah, he's a big time atheist.
Yeah, and he was. I saw him on a talk show, and he said, he goes, oh, look, I'll put it this way. I believe in one less God than you do. Hmm. Like, I just reject them. All you reject, however many, say there's 1,000 gods, you reject 999 of them.
Hmm.
You believe in yours. Ricky saying, I only reject one more than you.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Not. I'm not trying to. So I'm just pointing that out. Mm. I'm not saying that's what I'm doing. Yeah.
No, I get. Yeah. No, I hear where he's coming from. Obviously, I disagree.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think there's an interesting question as well. Like, what is the net result? You know. And I think when you look at any worldview, because there's a lot of different worldviews, right? You know, there's the skeptic, there's the person of faith, and within that there's, like, you know, multiple versions of that. There's the version of faith that we subscribe to, there's, you know, yes, there's lots, I would suggest that one of the most interesting ways to look at that is what is the effect that that view of the world produces? And, you know, I, to my understanding and based on, again, you've met different people to the people that I've met, but the people that I have met that believe in the version of God that I agree with and I believe in, it seems to create people who are, not universally, but for the most part, they are people who have had the most amount of healing and positive change in who they are as a person. And I think that says something about the worldview, even if, and to that end, even if it's wrong, and I don't think it's wrong, I think the reason that it works is for that very point, that it's not wrong. But even if it's wrong, it has made such a dramatically positive effect on those individuals. And I think that's a good argument for the accuracy as well.
Yeah. Mm. I on that sort of a note, I've definitely got to say that as in people that I've come across, quality of person, trustworthiness, honesty, those sorts of things, always top-notch with Christians, you know, like you guys, so to speak.
Yeah.
Which is...
I 100% agree.
Very unheard of in the real world, so to speak.
And there's exceptions.
There are.
Yeah.
But there's exceptions on all sides of the fence, right?
Exceptions on all. And I find that in Christianity, the exceptions are much less than most places.
So, like, what you guys believe in, is that the same as what, say, Catholic?
That's a really good question. So, the question, is it the same? That depends how you classify the same. If by the same you mean, do we both believe that, you know...
In the same God?
No.
Because what I was leading to...
No. It's really hard to say no.
I would say no.
Yeah. It's but really hard.
It is hard to say no.
Because I know that I personally know a lot of Catholics who I would say, yes, do believe in the same God. But if you were to look at what the Catholic Church teaches...
The Church as an organization.
Like, you read what that organization says it believes? No, I don't believe that it's the same God.
Mm. But there are good people in the church.
Yes, 100%.
Yeah.
That despite the church they are in,
but they
believe in the same God.
The church has obviously gone through some troubles, as in legally wise, you know. And I could imagine when some of them are standing in front of at the Pearl Gates or whatever it is, you know, Judgment Day.
Yeah.
It's not going to be real pleasant for them because of the pain they've inflicted and on. You know, some people, other people, so to speak. But yet the church powers on. Like, what's your guys' thought on that? How does that happen?
I think it's an organization devoid of God. Like the Catholic Church, in its higher ups, what would you say?
Leadership.
And, you know, like the church organization in and of itself has become a religious organization devoid of God. And when you get religion without God, you get chaos. You get, you know, rape and murder and all kinds of horrible things, because now it's not being led by God. It's no longer a theocracy. It's being led by, you know, whoever they elect next.
So do you think that...
Cardinals. And
it's the faith of that they've gone through and the way they've been brought up or whatever that's turned them into that sort of a person that would do those crimes or whatever. Or do you think that a person with that sort of headspace worked his way into that high position so that he could inflict the pain?
The second led to the former.
Yeah.
So. If you rewind and you look at the history of the church, the history of the Catholic Church, when
it's a very sad history.
It is a very sad history. Yeah. But the key part, which to answer your question, the key part is that when the Catholic Church became both a civil authority, so it actually had real world power, not just a spiritual leadership system, when it had that, the people then, if they wanted real world power, that realized that they could get it by getting their way into the church system,
Yeah.
And so the people who were, like you said, that were that way inclined saw an opportunity. And so they were like, okay, we're going to get into this system and we're going to like rise up to these levels so we can execute what we want to do.
So we can easily cause the pain we want to cause.
You can see the exact same thing happening in the United States at the moment with the evangelical movement.
Can we just pause just for a second?
Sorry, I'm going down a rabbit hole.
Yeah, I know. Just,
I'm like, politic talk.
Okay, give me 2 seconds. But just to finish where I was going, the second part of that question is like, you know, does that system create that? I think the fact that those people did come in and create that system, that is how we got to the Dark Ages and the Inquisition and, you know, the tortures that happened through that time frame. But I think by then, what happened during that time is that they started introducing new teachings that the Bible never said that allowed them to have more power. And those teachings so destroyed the truth that was in the Bible that it created a system that created more people like that.
Mm.
Then we have this cycle.
You can see the exact same thing happening. So if you want to see what has happened in the past, history repeats itself. It's happening at the moment.
Catholic people listening, we're not judging
no,
you.
No.
No, Catholic people are great. The system is broken.
Mm-hmm.
In America at the moment, it's just all of a sudden it's become popular and influential to be a Christian, right? And so 10 years ago, if you were a politician or someone of power, you would say to yourself, okay, I don't believe in anything particular. Unless I say I'm an atheist, no one's going to take me seriously, right? And so I'm a nefarious bloke. I'm an atheist. Right. And now it's the case where a nefarious bloke will be like, no one's going to take me seriously unless I say I'm a Christian. That's happening in the United States right now. And it'll happen here soon because we always follow them. Mm-hmm. Right. And so what's happening is all of these bad people are saying, I'm a Christian. I believe in God. And now you can stand back and go, Christians are bad people.
Because that's what you see.
Because that's what you see.
At least
you see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And that's exactly what happened to the Catholic system back in the day. Mm. As Luke said, as soon as they became powerful, and because they were the global superpower for more than 1,000 years, they ran the the Western world.
Yeah,
you know. And so, if you were a nefarious bloke and you wanted to have power over your, you know, people. Well, you had to become a Catholic, you know?
And which someone who's driven by Satan, I guess, as you would say, that's where your mind would go. You'd go, right, if I can get up to the top of there, the most powerful place in the world.
You have religious leaders that are completely devoid of God, right? And that's how you get bad religion. Well, that's how you get that bad religion anyway. There's a lot of ways you get bad religion.
Yeah.
But all of them come down to that these people are devoid of God. And they're heavily religious, and now you've got bad religion. And we were talking about cults this week, you know. Cults are a very similar thing. Yeah.
You worry me. I've got 80 acres
I was like, if I do buy this 80 acres, like I reckon I could just, you know, give out a bunch of spots to a bunch of my friends and we could start a little community. And he goes, you mean like a cult? I'm like, yes. Like a cult.
And then he got excited the rest of the day. He couldn't stop to use like,
started ranting about cults.
Yeah.
Yes, because this could never go wrong. Surely this would be wonderful.
That's never gone wrong in the past.
Yeah, then you tell me some stories about the ones you've heard about, eh?
Yeah. We did a whole episode on cults.
We have done.
It was an interesting one.
Mm. Anyway. Interesting.
So where do you reckon Satan is now? What is he up to right now?
He's hard at work. He's busy. So essentially what happened was, what the Bible says is when Jesus died on the cross and rose again, Satan lost all of his authority on earth and he was kicked out of heaven.
Okay.
Right?
Oh, he was still in heaven, was he?
Well, he was.
He had access
to heaven. He would go up there and he'd accuse God, right?
Yeah.
You see examples of that in the Bible, at least one example of that where he goes back up.
The accuser of our brethren versus that Revelation 12, is it?
Because he's way out. This is way after
Peter, isn't it?
Yeah, Apple. I mean, the Adam and Eve jobby. Yeah.
Yes. Way after that.
Yeah.
So he. It seems to be that the pattern is he is in heaven originally, as we chatted about last time round. he is kicked out of heaven.
I can read it right here.
Okay, you can.
So Revelation 12, verse 7. Mm-hmm. And war broke out in heaven. Michael and his angels fought with the dragon, Satan. And the dragon and his angels fought. But they did not prevail, nor was a place found for them in heaven any longer. Right? So they've been in heaven, they've been fighting, they've been warring, and now it's like, all right, there's no place for you here anymore.
Yep. Who said that? It was just a general consensus or something.
Well, because God had won the battle on earth.
He said, who said it? So, like, essentially, this is the person narrating, right?
This is the narrator saying.
Yeah.
So that great dragon was cast out. The serpent of old, called the devil and Satan, who deceived the whole world, was cast to the earth, and his angels were cast out with him. Then I heard a loud voice in heaven saying, now salvation and strength and the kingdom of our God and the power of his Christ have come. For the accuser of our brethren, that's Satan, the accuser of our brethren, who was accusing them before our God day and night, has been cast down. Right? So he's gone. They've booted him out of heaven because he's been up there and he's been accusing them this whole time. Right? And I think I...
Who's that? Like you're saying they've booted him out, but...
As in,
doesn't say,
as in God and all of the angels.
We don't know a whole lot about heaven.
Right.
We do know that that God is there, and we do know that the angels are there.
So I think I explained a little bit last week about how... Anyway, I'll keep reading.
Yeah.
Verse 12, it says, rejoice, O heavens, and you who dwell in them. Right? Why are they rejoicing? Because Satan's gone. Right? And then it says, woe to the inhabitants of the earth and the sea, for the devil has come down to you having great wrath because he knows that he has a short time. So essentially, he's down here now before he lost the battle in heaven, which the battle for him was lost the moment Jesus raised from the dead. Right?
Right.
Before he lost the battle, he was in heaven, he was on earth, he was controlling things here, he was accusing things up there. And
trying to take over.
Mm-hmm. Trying to take over, right? He's trying to take God's kingdom from him. That's why we're here. Mm. It says, rejoice, O heavens. It says, woe to the inhabitants of the earth, right? And then it says, he's down here with great wrath because he knows he has a short time. So previously he was here trying to steal the kingdom from heaven. Now he's stuck here and he's just angry.
Because he knows.
He's down here, you reckon?
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's doing what he can to destroy...
Well, this is the only place that he can be, because this is the only place where in the universe where there is sin.
Mm-hmm.
And so anywhere else...
No, he doesn't have legal... He has no legal right to be anywhere else.
That's right.
Right.
He's just, how do you know that?
Through studies of the scripture.
Yeah.
Right. Okay.
Yeah, yeah.
It's basically the story told throughout the entirety of it.
Yeah. There's one... There's,
and it's only you guys, or only us that's got sin.
Yes.
Yeah.
So
and hang on to that. Hang on to that sin, mate.
No.
There's an interesting story in the middle of the Bible, in the book of Job, and it's one of the few places in the Bible where it sort of parts the curtain and says this is what's going on in the background. And the short of that story is that Job is a really good guy. Like Job is the guy's name.
Okay.
And he says, there's this heavenly council, and it describes that. It's sort of, you've got this picture of, it says all of the sons of God come together. And so in other words, like the representatives of all of God's creation all come together for this event. And it says that Satan is there on behalf of earth. And why is he there? Well, because he got us to sin. And so therefore he somehow has now taken that role as our representative. Mm. And he says to God, well, God says to Satan, well, you know, if you think that you're the one that's in control, have you seen my servant Job? And he goes, he's an upright man. He's got a good heart. He is following me. You know, you obviously the implied thing is here, you don't own everything, right?
Mm-hmm. Can I read it real quick?
Yeah, sure.
All right. So Job chapter 1 verse 6, it says, Now there was a day when the sons of God came to present themselves before the Lord, and Satan also came among them. And so it's saying that there's this group of representatives, and they've come to God, and Satan has also come in this group, mm-hmm. right? And he's saying, I'm one of these guys. essentially gods.
Say the sons of God.
The sons of God. So in the Bible often Adam is referred to as the son of God.
Yep.
Because he had no mother or father. He was created by God, and he was essentially meant to be our representative. Anyway.
I asked that last week.
Yeah. And the Lord said to Satan, "From where have you come?" So Satan answered the Lord and said, "From going to and fro," or backwards and forwards, "on the earth and walking back and forth on it." So what he's saying is, I represent earth, which implies that all the other sons represent God's other created planets, right?
The other Jesuses.
The other Adams.
Yeah.
Okay. So the heads of those planets, the ones that God has appointed to be the head of that planet, right?
Yeah.
And Satan has come and said, "I'm the head of Earth." He's not saying he's the head of Earth and this one and that one and that one. No, he's saying, "I'm only the head of Earth." And the implication is Earth is the only fallen planet, essentially.
Mm-hmm.
So everyone else is good. We're the only unlucky.
And by the way, rest of that story is Satan saying to God, "Well, if you think that he actually serves you because he loves you, you're wrong. Because if you actually just let me hurt him a bit, he'd just turn around and curse you." And God says, "Okay, let's put that to the test." And so Job loses his children, he loses his wealth, he loses all of this stuff to the point where he's like ready to die. And he still...
Satan leaves his wife alive.
Yes, because...
she stays there and nags him and tells him to curse God and die.
Yep.
Did you just make that up?
No, that's true. That's absolutely true.
Satan took everything good that he had.
That's not
funny. Yeah.
Satan took every good thing that man had. Anyway, sorry.
Yep. But yeah, as the story like goes on, basically... Job can't be cracked. Like he suffers. He wishes he was never born at one point, but at no point does he reject God. And then eventually God says...
He questions God,
absolutely. Yeah. But eventually God reveals himself to Job. And then Job, the restoration takes place. God gives him back, you know, more than he had before, you know, like by a large margin. And, you know, he has more children and lives a long life and like, you know, all. But the point that's made by the book in total is that there is this war, this controversy going on between God and between Satan, and it's all about the character of who God really is. Does he have the best interest of his children or does he not? So.
And the point of the story is that sometimes really bad things happen to really good people.
Yes.
And it's not because God is evil.
Hmm. Yeah, or that they've necessarily done something wrong.
Or that they deserved it.
That's right.
Yeah.
The point is that we are stuck in the middle of the crossfire of a massive battle that's going on behind the scenes, behind the curtain. When you look at the world through that lens, everything starts to make a lot more sense.
Mm. When you see it as a battlefield.
Yeah. Good versus evil. And there is a good force out there fighting for good in people's hearts and minds, and then that there is a evil force out there fighting for evil in the hearts of people's minds. What?
In the hearts of people's minds?
That was good.
Carried away in the poetry, sorry.
We're well over an hour, so that's probably why it's starting to break down over there. So the
poetry's starting to come out.
Yeah. But we probably should start wrapping this one up for this week. But Rick, thank you so much for coming back.
Absolute pleasure.
Asking us some more questions. It's been great.
Yeah.
Come back again?
Yeah.
We'll try again.
Keep this going.
No worries. Well, we'll leave it there. Thank you so much for joining us. If you have enjoyed this episode, please share it with a friend. If you have any questions that you'd like us to explore, by all means, let us know about that. And one of the things that we continually recommend, suggest that people do is to have these kind of conversations yourself. If you don't belong to a small group where you can, call your friends around and do this, I advise you to spend some time, call some people, say, "Hey, come over on Friday night. Let's have a conversation." If you do that, take a selfie, send it to us. We'd love to share it on the show, and we'll catch you guys next time. God bless. And that's the end of another episode. Just before I head off, I want to encourage you to go over to our page on Facebook and also our account on Instagram and follow us there, because that is where we interact with our listeners, and we would love for you to enter in and join the conversation. Also, while you're signing up, I would also recommend signing up to our mailing list on our website, oztabletalk.com.au. If you do that, you will receive our exclusive content, because occasionally we do release exclusives and they only go out to our mailing list. So I would strongly recommend you go and sign up for that. If you have a few more minutes to be one of the most amazing listeners on the planet, you can go over to iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts and leave us a review, because reviews help us to grow and they help other people to find us. So if you want to help us reach those goals, please jump in and give us a review. The final message that I'd like to leave you with is to let you know about our Patreon account. Now, Patreon is a way for creators to get paid for creating, and ultimately what we do does cost money to get us hosted and have the services that we need to run the podcast. And so if you'd like to help us do that, jump over onto patreon.com/oztabletalk, and you can give anything from even $1 a month upwards. But at different levels, there are different benefits, different rewards that we want to give you just to say thank you for being an amazing supporter of ours. If you can't afford that, we would just gratefully accept your prayers, because that is what our ministry runs on. And so with that, I will leave you to your day, and thank you so much for listening to this episode. We look forward to seeing you guys next week.